Bad posture. Apparently it's bad for your health. So sit up straight, stop slouching. How many times have you been told that? For me, it's countless. From the moment where teenagers hunched at our desks to the time where workers hunched over our computers trying to follow the latest ergonomic instructions in our offices, we have been sent this message that posture, bad posture, leads to bad backs. But have we been misled? Karen Richards and Peter O'Sullivan are physiotherapists. They're also teachers at the School of Physiotherapy and Exercise Science at Curtin University in Perth. And their new research suggests that everything we've been told about posture, back pain and ergonomics may be incorrect. Karen and Peter, welcome to RN Afternoons.
Thank you.
Good to have you with us. This is going to be a bit of a bombshell, so let's get through this as well as we can, Karen. I think we should start with you, if we may. Take us through your study.
Thank you. As you were saying, there are a number of strong beliefs in society and with healthcare practitioners that neck pain and posture, in particular, are related.
Yes.
So we decided that we would have a little look at some of the information out there, and we found that there wasn't really any compelling evidence between this relationship between posture and neck pain. And we wondered whether that was perhaps as a result of some of the weaknesses in some of the previous studies, in as much that they hadn't really looked at characterising posture in a particularly large fashion.
Okay.
So we decided that we would utilise the RAIN cohort study that we have over here in Perth. And we had over 1,000 17-year-olds enrolled in this study, and we were able to take photographs of them sitting on a stool, and we had a number of different markers on their neck and thorax, and looked at actually how they were sitting.
And you could break those down into various ways of posture in that group, couldn't you?
We were able to run some cluster analysis on these participants, and right. We found that there were four common ways that these participants were sitting. There was one group that was sitting very upright. There was another group that was sitting very slumped with their head a long way forwards. We also had a group that sat very upright through their thorax but held their head a long way forwards. And we had a group somewhere in the middle, an intermediate group.
Now, Karen, traditionally, as a layperson, I would expect that when we look at the results on neck pain and back pain in those groups, that the group with the least amount of problems in those areas would be the one sitting up straight.
Yes, and I think when we went into this study, we had somewhat of a similar idea. We know that people that might sit, or we believe that people that might sit at either extreme of that range might be at risk of neck pain. So it could be that people that sit a long way forwards might have neck pain, and people that sit very upright perhaps might be a little bit of a risk to neck pain.
Mm.
We wonder whether, you know, perhaps those people that sit in the middle should be at less risk.
So is that what you found, in fact?
That wasn't what we found at all. In fact, actually, we found that there was no difference in the prevalence of neck pain across those four groups. We found that there were a number of other factors that were associated with posture, including females were more likely to sit up more upright. We found that more overweight people were more likely to sit with their head forwards. People that exercise more frequently are more likely to sit upright. And
okay.
Taller people sit more upright as well.
How interesting. Okay, so with all those variables you've just mentioned, there were so many questions that were springing. That's why I sort of jumped on you there too quickly. Where do I begin on this? I need to ask this question. They were 17 years old when you looked at this cohort of 1,000 people.
Yes.
For how long did you study the prevalence of neck and back pain? Because I would argue to you that anecdotally, at least, it seems to me you may not have these issues at 17, but if you continue that posture into later life, isn't that where problems arise?
Well, I might better pop in here if that's okay.
Yes.
This
is Peter
tracking,
O'Sullivan, everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go on.
So we've been tracking this cohort since the age of 14, and they're now in their mid-20s.
Okay.
And it may come as a surprise. We published a paper a couple of years ago looking at the prevalence of back and neck pain in 17-year-olds, and around 1 in 5 17-year-olds are reporting neck and back pain. they're seeking care, they're avoiding activity, they're taking time off school or at work because of that problem. And so this highlights that actually back and neck pains is something that emerges very commonly during adolescence and sets its trajectory to later life. So we've been able to track that in this group into the early 20s and just published a paper, in fact, highlighting that a significant number of these young people at that age are tracking into adulthood with the same problem.
And Peter, do we have enough generational analysis to know whether it's this current generation that's having a greater prevalence, as you say, one in five, yeah, compared to other generations who are maybe less sedentary, less computer-based?
Well, it's really tricky to answer that question because good data really hasn't been collected. The RAIN cohort study is probably one of the most richly characterised data sets of a population study, but we do have comparable data from other colleagues up in Finland and other parts of the world, which is showing a very similar trend. The evidence would say that the disability related to pain is probably on the increase. The prevalence, we're not sure because the earlier data wasn't really there to support it.
So I take it, Peter, that as someone who's been in this profession for 30 years now, nearly 30 years, you're a professor in the School of Physiotherapy and Exercise Science. You've worked with Karen, who's sitting beside you in our booth in Perth, with these results to hand. Are you shocked?
Not really. And the reason for this is my career has been one of, I'm a practicing physiotherapist as well.
Yeah.
Is the reason we do research is to question, we have these hypotheses and we do the research to test the hypotheses. And pretty much every study I've been involved in, and we've published around 190 research papers, has forced us to re-question our beliefs. And I think what that highlights is with pain, we have very strong beliefs around the causes of things like back and neck pain.
Well, can I
and
say
often those not a, beliefs?
Can I just say, sorry to interrupt on this, Peter, but I mean, on that very issue, an entire professional industry has been set up, billions of dollars of money has been poured into the ergonomics of trying to prevent back and neck pain by making us do things that are purportedly going to do us some wealth of benefit. Are you saying that's all wrong?
Well, I just before I came, because I figured you'd ask me that, I downloaded a recent systematic review, a systematic review is looking at all of the research evidence for the effectiveness of physical and organizational ergonomic interventions in back and neck pain, and they conclude.
Go on.
A solid overview of the high quality epidemiological evidence on the usually lack of effectiveness of ergonomic interventions in back and neck pain. So actually, there's not strong evidence for this. Now, to be fair, there is some evidence that encouraging being active in a workplace is good. There's some evidence that encouraging postural variability is good. So vary your postures. Movement's good, but the idea that an upright posture is better for your back or neck, we don't have the evidence for that.
Okie dokie. So this means that some of the furniture, some of the positioning at desks, some of the exercise and workshop regimes that some corporations and companies, the ABC included, have paid good money for, may have come to naught.
Well, I think you'd have to step back from that and say if the interventions are encouraging postural variability, are encouraging people to take regular breaks, encouraging physical activity, then that's supported by the evidence.
Yes.
If the interventions are telling people to hold a specific posture, there's not strong evidence for that. Now, you know, we've published a lot of research around the issue of back pain and sitting, and there is some evidence that if you're holding very upright, tense postures, then relaxing back into the chair is good. So having a chair that allows you to do that can be helpful.
Should that chair have good lumbar support? Peter, or shouldn't I even talk about that anymore?
So, that's another really interesting thing, because we know there's a group of people with back pain who hold their back very arched. In fact, we would encourage them to reduce the lumbar support in that situation. But again, that's creating more postural variability. So we know from studies that have looked at people with back pain and neck pain, they tend to hold more tension in their back muscles. So encouraging postural variability and encouraging strategies that enable them to be a little bit more relaxed and variable with those positions, that there's some evidence to support that. But telling people to sit up straight in lordosis with the lumbar support, holding their core, there's not good evidence for that.
Hang on. I mean, holding your core isn't good for you? I go to Pilates. Are you saying I've wasted my time there as well?
No, because movement's good. So physical activity is good, and we would encourage it. To hold a tense, upright, rigid posture, there's not good evidence for that.
What about the, and Karen, can I come to you on this? And if you just joined this conversation or are a little gobsmacked by what's going on, we're talking here about the research coming out of WA from my two guests in part. There's a wider team than this. Karen Richards is a musculoskeletal physiotherapist. She's a lecturer in the School of Physiotherapy and Exercise Science at Curtin University. And at that same university, Peter O'Sullivan, who's a professor in the School of Physiotherapy and Exercise Science and has worked in the industry as a physio, practicing physiotherapist for close on 30 years. Karen, just back to these results, we kind of went, okay, so there's no evidence to suggest that any one posture is better than another when it comes to wiping out the propensity towards back or neck pain. Were there any variations at all in relationship between how people sat and pain?
There wasn't any statistically significant difference, so we can't say that there was an actual difference.
Okay.
But interestingly, just going back to one of your questions earlier, the group that had the highest prevalence of neck pain were actually our most upright group, and the group that had the lowest prevalence of neck pain were our most slouched and head forward posture group.
Hallelujah. So, we can all now rise up proudly, well, slump up proudly and go, we've been on the right path all the time. I know we're making fun of this, but I mean, the point is that I don't think I'm alone in thinking I have been castigating myself and have been castigated along with many other people about how we move through this world, particularly when we sit down on a chair or remain stationary for long periods of time. And it may be that we've been sold a pup.
Well, the other interesting thing that Karen highlighted there is that if you look at gender differences, one of the strongest predictors of how you sit is gender. So boys, the males tend to be the ones who are ignoring the postural advice.
And yet,
the females tend to be sitting more upright, and females have almost a double increased reporting of neck pain.
Well, of course, the next stage in this, of course, is further research. I mean, it's very difficult, and I don't want to be too conclusive because people might go, oh, well, there's no point to any of this then. But I think we do need to, and I think you've made this point, Peter, quite strongly, that exercise, activity for the body is
great
one
evidence
of the
for that.
Great evidence for that being of benefit. What else can help you avoid neck and back pain?
So I think when we look at it, we would say that back pain's a bit like the common flu. It's something that most people in their lifetime get. The key thing around back and neck pain is how you manage it. So if you're thinking bad stuff about your neck, like, you know, means that there's something damaged in your spine, that's probably really unhelpful, because we know that if you hold negative perspectives on back and neck pain, that can lead you to becoming more disabled. So we would say, look, it's a common experience for people. We know that it's influenced by a bunch of things. So genetics can have an influence, your stress levels, how much sleep you're getting, if you're tired and run down, if you're under pressure, you're more susceptible to pain. The key thing is how you manage it. And so we would say, look, healthy lifestyle factors, keeping regular physical activity, and really it's of your preference, getting good sleep, healthy lifestyle factors, postural variability, give yourself regular breaks. They're all really sensible things. And if you're getting into trouble, and it's really distressing, you then go and see someone who can take an evidence-based approach of helping you unravel those factors.
But if an evidence-based approach suggests that some of the approaches up until now have not been evidence-based, who do we believe?
Look, I think there's a growing, there's certainly a growing evidence that back and neck pain are much more complicated than just how you sit. And that really is reflective in the system, your nervous system being sensitized. And for a group of people, if you are under stress and you're run down or you're feeling sad or you're not getting enough sleep, that can manifest in you becoming sensitive around your neck and back. And understanding that's really important. So there's a growing understanding of that within the physiotherapy profession. It's certainly being taught now in the undergraduate and postgraduate programs. But it takes time to filter that through in terms of allowing, you know, updated evidence to push through into practice.
And is it fair enough to say that if you are undergoing some back pain in a specific area of your spine or maybe your hips, and someone suggests to you that you put your foot on an angled rest under your desk and the pain goes away, then that's a job well done?
Yeah, and I think if that creates more variability, so if you're someone who's sitting bolt upright at your desk all day and your back's tense and sore, then relaxing back into the chair with a footrest probably makes good sense. And that's what our data would show us. So, but that what that's doing is creating more postural variability. So if you're very tense, then relaxing's good. But if you're sitting slumped all day, then giving yourself more breaks and, you know, creating more postural variability is also a good thing to do. But to tell someone there is one posture that you should hold all the time, that's where the evidence is lacking.
Wow. Karen Richards, Peter O'Sullivan, it's been a hell of a conversation. I think you've blown apart so many conceptions and misconceptions across not only our community as laypeople, but also the professional industry as well. So I look forward to hearing what the backlash is on this over times to come. All the best for Christmas and slouch away.
Thanks very much. Well, keep your postural variability up, I'd say, and take regular breaks from the cricket. Get up and go for a walk. Take your dog for a walk. Play with your kids. Get some good sleep. Eat healthily. They're really smart messages, I think, for the public.
And the good news is my dog's a slumper. So, you know, this is going to be brilliant. Peter O'Sullivan, Karen Richards, thanks very much indeed.
It's a pleasure. Thanks.
You're listening to RN Afternoons.